two sisters, two royal marriages, two tragic deaths. Stay with me to listen to the story of the Princesses of Hesse. Welcome to Crusade Radio Network and Crossword, where cultural clues lead to the truth of the word. Today we're going to talk to Claire McHugh about her wonderful new book. Remember, all episodes of Crossword are available on our website at crusadechannel.com and at all the popular podcast services, including iTunes and Google Play. Welcome, Claire McHugh.
Great to be here, Michelle.
We are so honored to have you again for your second novel. Claire McHugh is the author of two historical novels, A Most English Princess and The Romanov Brides. After graduating from Harvard College with a degree in European history, she worked for many years as a newspaper reporter and later magazine editor. The mother of two grown children, she currently lives with her husband in London and in, I can't even say that word, Amagansett, New York.
It's Amagansett, New York, Long Island.
I'm a girl from Alabama. So we are here to talk about her beautiful new book. It's called The Romanov Brides, a novel of the last Tsarina and her sisters, and it is a William Morrow publication. So I can't wait to talk about this. So let's start real quickly with a sketch, Claire, of who are the two women that we're talking about. Who are the Romanov brides?
They are two princesses born in Darmstadt, which is a place in the west of Germany, near Frankfurt. Their father was the Grand Duke of Hesse-Darmstadt, one of the 30 small German states that existed before the unification of Germany. But most importantly, they were also the granddaughters of Queen Victoria because their mother, Princess Alice, was the famous queen's second daughter. She had gone out to Darmstadt. It was an arranged marriage, the marriage between their parents, but it was quite a happy one. And Princess Alice and her husband, the Grand Duke Louis, they had seven children. And Ella was daughter number two and daughter number two. And Alex was number six. And then eventually she was the baby because the youngest child died.
There are two princesses and they're related to Queen Victoria, but they really are born into a royal web of
connections. That's exactly right.
These weren't just two people off the streets. They were really truly of royal blood. And that really kind of came through both the father and the mother. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. It's hard for us to understand this living in a much more diffuse world. But in the second half of the 19th century, in particular, the royal families of Europe were totally interwoven by marriage. So while on the face of it, Ella and Alex's mother was the more well-connected person, being the daughter of Queen Victoria and her husband, Prince Albert himself, a prince in Germany of another place called Saxe-Coburg. But their father, Grand Duke Louis, also was incredibly well-connected because his aunt, Marie, had married the man who became Tsar Alexander II. So these girls were the first cousins once removed of another Tsar, Tsar Alexander III, who was the Tsar when these girls were growing up. On their father's side, they were connected to other Germans and to the Russian royal family. On their mother's side, they were connected with the British royal family and other Germans. So if you can imagine, it's like they're in the center and there's this web of relations going around all around them.
It's very difficult for Americans to understand this. We just don't have that royal sense about us. And one of the great things that you do in the book is that you put a genealogy tree in several different ways. And that really does help clarify these relationships. And it actually helps to see how interwoven these relationships really were, because it was not unusual for them to marry cousins. And for us, we're horrified by that. But it really, that was the thing to do. And actually, that kind of led to the downfall eventually, I would say, of the Romanovs because of the hemophilia.
Yeah, yeah. When I was writing about this, as you mentioned in your introduction, this is my second book about the family of Queen Victoria. My first one was about her older daughter who became the Crown Prince of Prussia and was the mother of the Kaiser. I began to think of this family and their many, many connections. It's like a small town because they had various branches of the family, but they all kind of lived in this psychological proximity to each other. But as we know, heredity and genetics matters. And it's very poignant that the fact that Nicholas and Alexandra did get married without really acknowledging the fact that Alexandra had a brother who died of hemophilia, or consequences of, and she also had an uncle. So even back then in the 1880s and 90s, it was possible to understand that hemophilia was moving through families down the female line. And had they wanted to look into it, they could have seen that there was a 50-50 chance. And the irony is that, Alexandra was thought of as appropriate to marry heir to the Russian throne because she was a quote-unquote royal blood. It's the irony that she carried with her a blood disease. But again, when you write historical fiction, you write about people in the mindset that they had, not in our mindset, an important distinction.
You really write your scenes very well. You really place the reader in these scenes in Darmstadt, and you do an especially good job in Russia, where I know you have not been personally. So you really do set the reader into this kind of Russian fairy tale that both of the girls move into. So Alex and Ella are the two stars of the book. They lose a mother at a very early and very tender age, almost a prepubescent age. So there is really no mother watching out for them. In steps Grandmama, Queen Victoria. And Queen Victoria is going to shape the lives of these girls in many ways, but ultimately she doesn't shape their decision to marry. What is their relationship with Queen Victoria?
It's true that once their mother had died, and she died, she herself was only 35. There was a wave of diphtheria that went through Darmstadt, and Princess Alice got ill after nursing her children, all of whom had it. And the youngest in the family, a little princess named May, died also. The remaining girls, four of them, the remaining boy, Ernie, they were immediately summoned to Britain because their bereft grandmother wanted to see them immediately. A month after their mother's death, they traveled to Britain, where they lived at Osborne House in the Isle of Wight with her for 8 weeks. And from that moment forward, she had known them well before that. But from that moment forward, she said to them, "You should regard me as your mother. I will try to do everything that your mother would have done." And I think Queen Victoria felt the number one goal she had for these children was to prepare them for their future life and marry them well. However, and they loved her, they really did. The four sisters ranged in age at the time of their mother's death from 15 to 6. And they did love her. She lived in Britain and they lived in Germany, and they were also coping with their rather feckless father, who pretty immediately acquired a mistress. And they had their own opinions about what their life should look like. And the Queen was always eager to get them married into members of the British royal family and have them near her. And the princes she had on offer were not very appealing, whereas some other callers, courting men, especially these two Russians, were far more appealing physically. They were dashing, both of them. So despite their real affection for the Queen, all four of the Darmstadt princesses married against her advice, and most notably Ella, number two, and Alex, number four.
Alex marries, of course, Nicholas II. This is the Tsarevich, unexpectedly thrusted into tsardom when his father dies at the age of 26, I think it was. He was young. He was not really ready for the crown at that point. Ella marries first. She marries the Grand Duke Serge, right?
That's exactly right. That Grand Duke Serge is the younger brother in Nicholas's father, the Tsar Alexander III. Four brothers, and one of them was Serge, and he came to meet Ella, his cousin, in 1881, and that's when their relationship began, and then they did get married. And it was at their wedding that Nicky, that was he's called in the family, the Tsarevich, the heir, where Nicky, age 16 then, met Alex, Ella's younger sister, age 12. They met for the first time at Ella and Serge's wedding.
Now, you know what's really interesting in the book, and you do a great job of drawing it out, is that this really sense of antagonism that Queen Victoria has toward Russia. She absolutely thinks this is disastrous. She was right. She knew that the danger that they were stepping into, she knew they were stepping into a very dangerous world and a world that was beyond her control. Why did she not like the Russians?
You know, it's so interesting, Michelle. She had several reasons for not liking the Russians, some more emotional than others. The number one reason, I think we have to be candid, that Queen Victoria didn't like the Russians was that they were, at the moment, Britain's most significant enemy in the world, in that they had fought a war, Crimean War, against the English in the 1850s, just 15 years before these events began, the events of my novel. They were also challenging Britain in the Eastern Mediterranean, where the Russians hoped to take over Constantinople and dominate in an area that Britain had traditionally dominated. And then they also challenged Britain in India, where they were bearing down in Central Asia. Russia was very expansionist then, as it is now. This was the kind of political reason that Queen Victoria had for disliking the Russians and feeling that she didn't want members of her family marrying into that, the Romanov imperial family. The second reason was she felt that the Romanovs were opposite in their style of ruling the constitutional monarchy in Britain that she embodied was. She knew that the Romanovs were autocratic. The regime in many ways was brutal. She disapproved very, very much and felt that the Romanovs were taking no efforts to modernize their style of rule, even after the liberation of the serfs. And then the third reason that she was really suspicious of her granddaughters going to live in this environment was in Russia, but she felt the Romanovs were decadent. They were among the richest families in the world. They spent millions on jewels, residences, soon to be automobiles. She felt dissipated, rich person's lifestyle. She is an avatar of middle classdom, modesty, getting on with your work, not no display. And she was worried that her granddaughters were being seduced by wealth. The granddaughters had lived, were actually among the poorest of the extended royal family. And she thought they were being lured into this by thinking, well, look how great it's going to be living in this lavish way. And I think included in that is that she was a bit suspicious that they might convert to orthodoxy. The queen is a firm Anglican and not at ease with the orthodox style of devotion.
Well, you know, this is interesting because their father was also not happy and not pleased with this. It's really interesting if you look at religion in Germany at that time. So he was a evangelical Lutheran. He was a conservative Lutheran. They call it evangelical. It was one of the kings that combined all the religions in Germany to turn into this Lutheran church. So he was absolutely against his daughters becoming Orthodox, which I find really interesting because he was kind of a dissolute man. He didn't appear overly Lutheran. There was definitely something there that he really did not want his daughters to become Orthodox Russian. We're talking Orthodox Russians not united with Rome. This is Orthodoxy. This is the great Orthodox Russian church.
That's exactly right. And it's interesting what you say about Grand Duke Louis, a man who was really a German officer by profession. He was a military officer. He had fought in the German wars in 1866 and then again in 1871. He's kind of a gruff military guy. However, very close to his heart was a sense that part of his heritage and what he wanted to give his daughters was this evangelical Lutheran faith in which they were baptized and confirmed. I think while he was not always a follower of the commandments the way he should have been,
delicately put,
He had a sense that this faith, which of course in Germany, you know, had been ripped apart for centuries, for decades by religious wars, and that the evangelical faith was something that he believed was the right way to worship. And he didn't want to lose his daughters into have them sucked away from him. I felt it's almost like that they would be, you know, estranged from him if they, he couldn't, he said, I think he felt that he wouldn't be as close to them, that he would have lost them to this foreign, exotic foreign faith, which he just did not want to do. He was alive when Grand Duke Serge first came to court Ella, and his only hesitation, the young couple wanted to get married and sought his approval, was, all right, you can if you promise never, never to convert. There had been a couple examples of other German princesses who married into the family and with the stipulation that they would never convert. But when Alex was being courted, Ella agreed to that. She said, I will never convert. There were two weddings. There was, when Ella married Serge, there was an Orthodox wedding, and then there was a Lutheran wedding. When Nikki started courting Alex, Grand Duke Louis, her father, was well aware that it would be impossible for her to marry the heir to the Russian throne and not convert. So he blocked the marriage for 3 or 4 years. And it was only after his death that Alex would consider it. And even to the last moment, she agonized that she was going against her father's, you know, essentially dying wish, and to agree to marry Nicholas, part and parcel of that, to convert. Other members of the family told her, you know, he would understand, or she was convinced that he was not here anymore and it was okay to go forward. But she had agonies of conscience over that choice.
So of the two marriages, of Ella marrying the Grand Duke Serge is probably the more interesting marriage, although you have Rasputin at the end. And I mean, that always gets everybody going. But this marriage between Ella and Serge, it was a complicated marriage, wasn't it?
It was indeed. It was indeed. The reason why I write about both marriages is because I believe that Ella deserves more attention in history. She was an extraordinary person who now is among the martyrs of the 20th century. There are statues of the martyrs of the 20th century up in Westminster Abbey. She is one of them. After Serge's death, she became a nun and opened a very important hospital for poor people in Moscow. But later she was murdered by the Bolsheviks. But I believe that we needed to go back to her early life to understand her path and understand why also she was so bound up in the fate of Alex. Ella took a chance marrying Serge. People said that his artistic temperament made him not the best possible husband. And they never did have children. And it's a question of whether or not their marriage was ever consummated. However, Ella was extremely devoted to Serge in that she respected him greatly. She knew he wasn't the easiest of personalities. She tried to protect him and enhance his life. And it's a story of devotion. And it's a story of Ella trying to come to terms with her disappointments, trying to also find good in her life. And that's she did after her, just before her father's death, she did convert against his wishes. And she found a new dimension of faith, becoming Orthodox, being united with Serge in their faiths together. And it was she who really encouraged Alex to marry Nikki. And thus, so much of history turned on that decision by Ella to really push for the marriage of Alex and Nikki, which was truly a love match, and of course, blessed with 5 children.
Right. As you said, that's that turn of history. It really did turn history because, I mean, of the consequences of that marriage between Alexandra and Nicholas. One of the scenes that you write in the book is when Serge is blown up, and that is a horrific scene where she has to basically collect his disassembled body, Ella does. And that really is one of the searing scenes of the book. This woman went through a lot. She really went through a lot to only die by the Bolsheviks by being thrown down by a well at the end of her life. So the story is so poignant on Ella. And I had never read much about Ella. So you really bring her out in the book. And like you say, she's the turnkey to the rest of the history of how it ended. So Alexander and Nicholas, they loved each other really at first sight as children, and this develops. And the Russian royal family doesn't really want this to happen. The German royal family doesn't want this to happen. The British royal family doesn't want this to happen, but love prevails. And they actually convince everybody. They get married. They live life. Everything is good until they have a child that has hemophilia. And you don't really get into that very much, but that's really where the marriage falls apart. It doesn't fall apart, but history starts falling apart, because that's where you bring Rasputin in. And she never really adapts to becoming Russian. She is always seen as the German. Was Ella seen as a Russian, or was her Germanness as profound as Alex's was?
Ella had a great deal more flexibility as a character, as a personality. Ella was embraced by the Russians, first by the Romanovs and then by the Russians very successfully. Alex is a very stiff person and shy person, perhaps because losing her mother so early in life. Alex's older sister, Ella, had great charm and great integrity. And as soon as she came to Russia, people really warmed to her. And she was much more interested, I'm afraid, than Alex ever was in the real Russian soul. She tried to meet and know a lot of Russians, and especially after she was widowed so tragically in the first weeks of the 1905 revolution, when Serge, a much hated figure, then the governor of Moscow, he was always a very severe person, and he did a lot of things that were really wrong in Moscow. He exiled all the Jews. He made all the Jews leave Moscow. But also he cracked down in other ways, and he was a target of revolutionaries. She managed to sort of be seen, and as she was, somebody who was much more compassionate. After she was a widow, she sold all her jewels. She gave up being a Grand Duchess. She took the veil, and she founded a convent and hospital in the center of Moscow's most poor district. And after that, she was even more beloved. And, you know, it was a real surprise to people in Moscow that the Bolsheviks went after her. You know, they had imprisoned, the royal family had been under house arrest from the time of the first Russian revolution in the first part of the 1917 revolution. But Ella was left to do her good works in Moscow until the Bolsheviks took over. And then in the spring of 1918, apparently Lenin said, "We cannot let that woman continue to operate. Royalty, virtue with a crown on top is more dangerous to the worldwide revolution than 100, 1,000 tyrant czars." So he arrested her and took her out of Moscow, and the Bolsheviks in Siberia murdered her. They hated all Romanovs, and they almost hated Ella more, because she tried to get close to the people and give up her royal trappings. She's an extraordinary person.
Sure, she was a threat. She was threatening to. I think, and one of the real tragedies in the story is, and your book doesn't go so much into it, but is that the Romanovs family wanted to try to get to Great Britain, and the British said no, they would not allow them to come. And if they had been allowed to come, then they probably would have lived at that point. Or who knows what history does. So
it's a complicated story. Yes. George V, who is our Queen Elizabeth, recently deceased. George V is her grandfather. And he was a reticent and stodgy, careful person. He was the first cousin of both Nicholas and Alexandra. Through his mother, he was Nicholas's first cousin. Through his father, he was Alexandra's cousin. And it was his instinct to let them come, but Prime Minister and his own advisor said, no, you cannot have bloody Nicholas, who that was what he was thought of as by the revolution. You cannot have him in this country, and you cannot agree to give him a home here. So he he was dissuaded from doing it. He might have done it if there had been more time, but then the Bolsheviks took over and then they were taken away from St. Petersburg. And after that, it's much far harder to get to them. After they learned what happened to the family and how they were all massacred, the British government did do a much better job of rescuing later in 1918, the remaining members of the Romanovs who had survived and were living in Crimea. And they were picked up by a British warship.
Claire, what insight in writing this book, in writing about royalty, in writing about Russia, does it give you for today, for right now, especially as we are so, our relationship with the West and Russia is so fraught. We're watching kind of the royalty in Britain to read through it all. But any lessons for us today on this?
It is astounding, one would think, and I do think, that Russia remains out of step with Western development.
And, absolutely. With Western development. That's the thing.
Yeah. And I was very disappointed not to be able to travel to Russia to research my novel. I was lucky to, there's so much stuff online now, pictures and films of those palaces where they lived. But it's extraordinary to me that of the kind of things that Queen Victoria said about Russia and the problems from Russia, you could change the names and you would have the same problem. Now, as it goes to the royal family of Britain, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, one of the takeaways of my novels is that royal status is very hard to maintain for the people who are trying to maintain it. And the challenges of a hereditary system are manifold. And, you know, it's incumbent on Prince William, who I think has stumbled a little bit in recent weeks dealing with this crisis over his wife's health, to realize that the current day, in order to keep this going, candor and straightforwardness is required. And the mortality that we see, you know, the fears that people have about the health of the king and also the Princess of Wales are natural in a situation which a family, a group of people, you know, related by blood, have this outside status. So I guess what I'm saying is that it's hard to be a royal person. It's hard to keep a royal family going. The challenges are constant and they change. And I think our current royal family, beloved as they are still struggling to live and thrive in a social media world, in a world where there's a lot of information. And it's funny because when you look back at the experiences of Nikki and Alex with their son who had hemophilia, they kept that a secret.
I thought about that. Yeah.
They didn't understand why they were doing certain things. They were doing certain things. They brought Rasputin into their inner circle because of this illness, but they felt they couldn't confess it. When Nikki was abdicating, he in the end abdicated in favor of his brother because he couldn't bear to put the pressure on his ill son of being the new czar.
Yeah, it's funny. I really thought about that. I thought, boy, Queen Victoria is rolling around in her grave right now. So, I mean, what she said, 100 years ago is true today, or 120 years ago is true today. And you can say the same thing. So I don't know if humanity learns. I don't know. And it's easy to look at a story like this and kind of wonder. Claire, I want to really congratulate you with this book. You've written two absolutely beautiful and charming books. This is a great book club read because it gives you a story, it gives you a romance, it gives you history, and it really puts you in the lives of these two women that actually face kind of contemporary problems of, you know, marriage and family and life and love. We've been talking to Claire McHugh. It's The Romanov Brides, a novel of the last Tsarina and her sisters. Thank you so much, Claire McHugh.
It was a great pleasure, Michelle, to talk to you again. Thanks very much.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks for listening to Crossword. Remember, all episodes of Crossword are available on our website at crusadechannel.com and at all the popular podcast services, including iTunes and Google Play. Please visit our sponsors, including mypillow.com/kingdude. Please write to me with show suggestions at Michelle at crusadechannel.com. And that's Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E. And I am Michelle McAloon for the Crusade Radio Network. We'll see and hear you next time here on Crossword. And remember, keep reading, keep talking. God bless.